Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You've got an idea, haven't you?
Yes, and it's not one of my favorites. In fact, I don't care for it at all.
Next time you get an idea, keep it to hold you open.
Hold to open?
Yes, and what do you do?
I'm not too sure myself, but neither of you is very popular.
It was their inventive genius that made him one of the greatest powers in the universe. Remember that.
Well, you might as well share it.
We have decided the action we will take.
If some people we don't even know have to die, that's just too bad.
Here come the drums!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Pull to Open, the only ongoing quest on your podcast dial to watch all of the television show Doctor Who in completely random order. My name is Chris Taylor.
And I'm Pete Paschal, and you, dear listener, are a very smart person. Why? Well, because you've chosen the Doctor Who podcast that does not discriminate. You may be new to Who, you may be a hardcore fan, you may be a fan of the modern series, or maybe classic Who's your thing. Doesn't matter. You're welcome here at Pull to Open. Even if we make references to various dampening fields and maybe plague missiles, don't worry. It's all going to make sense eventually.
That's right. Once the Daleks get back to their ship and fire some missiles at a teeny tiny TARDIS, it will start to make sense. But we are going to start to make sense of our random journey as we do every week, because it's kind of looking a little less random than even than usual. And it's pretty unrandom usually, but even more so, less so. I don't know where I'm going with this, but anyway,
it's been on a lot of streaks, shall we say.
It really has. It really has. So yeah. Three stories ago, just in time for Christmas.
Whoa. Let me tee it up for you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Previously on Pull to Open.
Dun, dun, dun. Three stories ago, just in time for Christmas, we saw A Christmas Carol, and we had the ethical dilemma of the Doctor changing the life of Kazran. And should he have done that? We talked about that a lot. And then we said, give us a break, randomizer, from ethical dilemmas. The randomizer said, oh no, you're going to Demons of the Punjab, and you're going to burrow into the history of partition in India. So I dutifully did that. We had a massive history corner in that podcast then. And then it finally gave us a break, but not the kind of break we were looking for. It gave us lots of mini breaks, like package holidays, where you get to go to the Empire State Building for 5 minutes. Not a very good package holiday, I would say, but at least we had fun on the trip. It was, of course, The Chase, ending in London 1965 and filled with hilarious Daleks. And then we had some other requests for the randomizer, and the randomizer said, no, I don't care what you're asking. I love those hilarious Daleks. So Pete, where did it take us for today's story?
Took us to season 11, serial 3, Death to the Daleks.
That's right. It took us to a Dalek snuff movie, as this very much is. We'll get into that. We should also mention that along the way, we did hot takes on all the specials, and we're going to do a lukewarm take at some point.
Yeah, we should do that. I probably should have mentioned that before we even started. No, I think it'd be a good idea to, not right now, not immediately, but maybe in a few weeks as the specials and the Church on Ruby Road have settled in our brains, we can sort of process where they sort of feel after a little bit. Because, you know, there's hot takes, there's cold takes, which is kind of our podcast. There's the kind of in-between sort of almost consensus takes and, you know, well,
tepid
it's
takes.
More like, tepid takes, because you're combining your initial reaction with a more recent reflection and then sort of taking into account how, like, the fan consensus
has settled on it.
And maybe the consensus might be wrong even. So, you know, we can chat about them more as a package. Also, we haven't really chatted about the whole thing as a package. That was a lot of Doctor Who in a short period of time. And you know, it's just like, what does that mean? What does this mean for the era that we are going to encounter later in the year? So
not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. I like that. And yeah, so we do a lot of things on Pull to Open. We do our random adventure. We occasionally do, the super hot takes and then the tepid warmed over day after Christmas Day takes, where we fetch the turkey of the specials out of the fridge, stick it inside a sandwich, and see what we think of it. But something else that we do on Pull to Open is we talk about... So as we're on this random adventure, long-time listeners know I'm trying to avoid BritBox as much as possible because they raise their prices. BritBox is the only place where you can get the... We thought was the only place where you get the classic series. But Pete, you discovered this somewhere new, which I didn't know about.
Apparently, the BBC has done some kind of deal with Tubi. So that's T-U-B-I. It's an app I discovered honestly by chance because I was browsing around on my Fire TV and you got your homepage with all the stuff coming at you. And I'm an idiot, you know, when I surf the web or whatever, I'm always just like, accept all cookies, accept everything. I'm sure every marketer from here to New Zealand has a profile of me and knows exactly what I'm watching at any time. But obviously the Fire TV knew I've watched Doctor Who on various apps. And it served as a recommendation. It showed me a little icon of the Second Doctor and that I could watch season two. But it looked like this new icon I've never seen before. And I clicked on it. And lo and behold, it said, watch now on Tubi.
Yeah.
And then when I downloaded the app for free and then logged in for free, although I needed to log in with my Amazon account, it was like every single classic series episode was there. And including... I haven't checked, but I think it's most, if not all, of the animations.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Hot tip. We can all abandon BritBox. Wow. I kind of wish I had known that before I watched Death of the Daleks on Daily Motion with French subtitles, which is your other free option here. But you know what? I'm kind of getting into the French subtitles. I like it.
So you either watch with the French subtitles or the English ads.
That's right.
Entirely up to you.
Depends on whether you're studying any languages at the moment. If you think it might be useful to watch the Doctor be a Frenchman, which kind of makes a lot of sense of a lot of the Doctor's activities.
So enjoy that. If you're looking for a place to watch Classic Who, one place you can't watch Classic Who, of course, is YouTube. But you can watch us talk about it on our YouTube channel, which we're super excited about and are really trying to invest more time in this year. Folks, don't forget, if you are on YouTube, you can become a true companion of the podcast for the low, low price of $7.99 a month to support the podcast. And you will... starting with this episode, actually, but if you do it after this episode, it'll be for every subsequent one. You'll get them a day early. You'll get them Fridays instead of Saturdays, and you can become a Pull to Open hipster.
Yeah, a true companion. Not an Adam, a true companion.
You get the full 10 points.
Go back to our
$7.99 a month.
Yes, do that, and then go back to our Who is a True Companion podcast. To check out our reference on Adam there. So we got the commentary on Power of the Daleks. I really do not want to say Death of the Daleks. Every time I've been thinking of this story, I've been thinking of it as Power of the Daleks or Evil of the Daleks or Planet of the Daleks. Anything but Death to the Daleks. Maybe I don't wish them death.
I think we need to probably, as part of our commentary, zero in on that preposition, which really throws things off. It's pretty nuts.
A Doctor Who title has never really done that sort of call to action before. Like, Death to the Daleks, I say. Like, that's going a bit far from neutral there, Doctor Who titles.
It's kind of taking a position on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get to our commentary on it in just a moment, folks. But before that, what's that I hear? Is it the Whomoji Challenge?
My least favorite 10 seconds of the week.
And I think it's going to be longer than 10 seconds this time. Not to spoil. Yes, this is the time where I describe emojis to Chris, and he is blessed with trying to figure out the Doctor Who story title.
Hashtag blessed.
That those emojis correspond to. Okay, so this Humoji challenge, this is the final one from a package that was from Bob Gilby, longtime friend of the pod. And you, sir, are in for a bonus because it is a double feature. There are two in this one. So there are two Doctor Who stories because you'll figure this out in a minute. The emojis are related, very related.
What?
Both
what?
Of those stories. So there's two different stories. So it'll all become clear in a moment, folks.
Wow. All right. Okay. So I have two chances to get it right. Or do I need to get both of them?
No. I think once you get one, the other will become obvious.
Oh,
so, but I'm
okay.
going to describe them all at once
all
because
right.
they're related to each other. So I'm going to give you both sets of emojis, and then you tell me the stories they represent.
All right.
Here we go. First set, three emojis.
Mm-hmm.
First emoji, cop, male cop.
Okay.
Second emoji, another male cop. Third emoji, trash bin.
Oh, okay.
I'll even pause there if you want to hazard a guess, but I can get you the second one, which will probably help a bit.
You know what? The trouble
maybe just a bit.
The trouble with doing this podcast is now, like, two male cops, I can only think of Nightmare of Eden. Which
not
obviously
Nightmare of Eden.
Doesn't have any Daleks in it, which is obviously what the trash can represents. So it's police of the Daleks. It's oh God, a cop.
You're almost there. You're almost there. So let me get the second one, and it should on some level, if you're familiar with the episodes, give you a clue what the first one is. So here we go.
Okay.
Second one. Male cop.
Yes.
Male cop.
He spelled robot. Screw me up. Ooh. Okay.
I'm going to put these in the chat so you can see them.
Okay. The male cops are really messing me up, as many people have said throughout history. Wow. Is it... It's evil... No, okay. So what applies to both Daleks and, I'm presuming, Cybermen is what's intended by the robot? So what have we had for both? We've had Revenge of the Cybermen. We haven't had Revenge of the Daleks. Where are the cops? The cops are just... The cops have just pulled me to the ground. They're beating me with nightsticks. I really don't know.
I'm not sure how... Is cop also used in Britain? <It's> like, I should say policeman.
The policeman of the Daleks. The policeman of the Daleks?
So I'm going to give you one hint which might give it away.
Okay.
So we've only done one of these stories for the podcast, and it was quite some time ago.
Okay. Attack of the Cybermen. I'm trying to think of now, like, what that Colin Baker... Ooh,
judges? Ooh. Okay, you got one.
Attack of the Cybermen?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was a guess. It was a guess, but you got it, so... Well, we'll give it to you. So that's Attack of the Cybermen.
Because there are cops in it. Okay. There isn't an Attack of the Daleks, though.
There's not an Attack of the Daleks.
But
no.
Are there cops in a Dalek story? Like, now I'm thinking of, like, Revolution of the Daleks, because they are cops.
You shouldn't need the hint now. Now the audience is like, come on.
So we're talking the content of the story, right? Rather than the title.
That's correct.
Okay. God, police and Daleks. Policemen and Daleks.
You might not have seen this one, maybe.
I probably haven't. Is it Evil of the
Daleks?
I'm
going to give you the hint that gives it away.
Okay.
So if it doesn't give it away, you probably just haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm betting I haven't seen it. But anyway.
So in a way... not in a weird way, but in a direct way, the Cybermen episode is a sequel to the Dalek episode.
Oh God, it's the one with what's his name? In it's in the Colin Baker era, but it was also the Peter Davison one was the original, and it was the one that where Tegan leaves. It's
which is
oh god, it's right before Planet of Fire, which was the very first pull to open random episode. Oh god, why is it? Is it Resurrection? Is it Resurrection?
Resurrection of the what?
The Daleks.
Yes. You gotta say the title.
I gotta say the full title. Oh god. Braveheart Tegan.
The whole emoji challenge, you gotta say the
title. Yeah, okay, you're
good
right.
Job. Good job.
No, not a good job.
Not really.
We don't need
job.
To sugarcoat this. It was a terrible job.
I was kind of delighted that this one Bob gave us because it was very clever. It took me a while, and he needed to give me similar hints. I got to it.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Good job, Bob. Thanks so much. Very cool takes on these episodes. That was an emoji challenge for the ages.
Yeah, I'm going to give that one to Bob. I think Bob deserves the title for that one. But firstly, because he's provided so many of these. Thank you, Bob. But also, that was good job. What was the name of the character that was in both of them? Because who gets cyber converted? This is going to bother.
Would be Litten, my friend.
Litten. Okay.
Our friend Litten, Morris Colburn.
Indeed, good old Litten. Yeah, I have watched Resurrection of the Daleks. It was a long, 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 long time ago, and now I just remember it for Tegan leaving.
That was back in the first segment of time.
Indeed.
All right, folks, you too can submit a emoji to Pull to Open and have it read out on air, maybe by Chris if he guesses it right, but we'll see. You can submit those through a review, a lovely way to support the show. Even if you don't want to become a true companion on YouTube, you can leave a review on the Apple Podcasts app, and you can leave your humoji challenge there, either as the title of your review or in the text. We'll take both or either. And it's a great way to support the pod. So please go ahead and do that.
Indeed. And something else you can do to support us and to interact with us. If you're on Spotify, look at your screen. That's right. Hello. Hi. Here we are. Video podcast on your screen, assuming you're watching us on Wi-Fi. But also, if you see that thing at the bottom, there's a little poll there. You pull it up. It's a poll to open where you can vote. You will vote right now. You will vote right now on Death to the Daleks. Whoa, sorry.
I turned down my headphones here.
Hey, Daleks, do not check their levelator. Yes, so there's a poll down there, and we're going to read out the results from a couple of weeks ago from Demons of the Punjab. And it's a very exciting result because it's a two-horse race between the Dalek, which is what we give to a good episode, and the special rating that we normally have a Viscount banger. But for Demons of the Punjab, given that Viscount Mountbatten was in charge of partitioning the Punjab, we renamed it a Mahatma banger, and the votes are in, and the Mahatma is now President banger, with the Dalek runner up. The Daleks have been partitioned into their own country, Dalekistan, and they it's a close runner up. They had a really good showing. 45% there for the Daleks.
Yeah,
so,
it was roughly 55-45.
Yeah.
For those two. That's pretty good. I like that result.
And now, and it sort of mirrors what we had going on. I said it was Mahatma Banga. You said it was a Dalek. I win. There it is. Shut it down, folks. Except don't, because this poll is ongoing. You too can, if you think it's a Dalek and not a banger, you can vote right now. Go back to the Demons of the Punjab episode. Time can be rewritten in Pull to Open polls.
Yeah, and we're all about the peaceful transfer of power here in Pull to Open. So I am completely giving you a concession call. And yep, the fans have spoken. This is a banger.
Daleks do not concede elections. Explain.
They don't. They don't, but they do other things, and they sometimes appear on posters and novelizations with their heads getting blown off with the exaggerated eye stalks. I used to have that poster, I will say, for those watching on YouTube. I've got my Liberation of the Daleks poster, because I rarely break that one out, and I just did the classic Dalek poster.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, plus, you kind of want to remember the Daleks in happier times, not like having an existential crisis as some of them do in this one.
A little bit.
Get a bit weird, but we're going to talk about that after we do our regular segment, TLDW, Too Long Didn't Watch Too Long Doctor Who, where one of us summarizes the story in 30 seconds per classic episode. This is a four-parter, so whoever the fool who has to do this is has 2 whole minutes. I woke up this morning thinking that fool was me, and then I listened to last week's podcast and realized, no, I did the chase. Therefore, this week, sir, it is you.
Why is it always one of us? Why can't we both do it? Why don't we like pack each other up and like I'll take episode one, you take two, three.
Great idea.
It would be like a relay race.
That's a great idea. Let's implement that for the next story. However, yes, you too have to summarize a weird Dalek story. So how are you feeling?
I feel about as good as I usually do. I think I did one good one recently, and now I've been sort of going over. So here I have one request.
Yes.
As you read out the 30 seconds, minute 30, I want you to do a Dalek voice. Do it as shrill as you can. So that it adds to the pressure. And I feel like I'll thrive under that.
Oh my goodness. Because of Death of the Daleks, I went and rewatched the Dalek relaxation tape on YouTube, which if you haven't seen that, go and watch it. It is the best meditation tape ever. I'm probably dating myself by even calling it a tape, but there's an upgraded version of it, and it's fabulous. Your stress will be exterminated. But the stress is not yet exterminated here on the TLDW as we dive into the official pull to open summary of Death to the Daleks in 2 minutes, starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
So the Doctor and Sarah are on their way to a vacation. They end up materializing some other planet. The power of the TARDIS is completely sapped. They have to manually open the doors. The Doctor goes and explores. Sarah goes to follow him, but they get separated. The Doctor gets captured by these Exelons, the natives, and he eventually escapes and encounters the Earth crew that has crashed there, but Sarah gets captured by the Exelons, the natives, and then the Earth crew's been there, and they explain to the Doctor that they're there to get
this 30 seconds
perineum that's going to cure this plague, this space plague that's happening on Earth colonies. But then this other ship lands, and it's Daleks, and the Daleks try to kill them, but they're also affected by this general dampening field that's sucking any and every all electricity from everything. So they end up all getting captured by the Exelons because they've had to make this uneasy alliance with the Daleks, who can't kill them because their guns don't work. And then they end up getting captured, thrown into a prison with everyone. Sarah's about to be sacrificed.
1 minute.
The city, and that's the worst crime you could commit there. So they end up, we're going to sacrifice her. The Daleks replace their weapons with machine guns. So now they have the upper hand again. And they try to sacrifice the Doctor and Sarah by putting them underground. So that gives them a chance to escape. And then there's this whole root system out of the city, because the city's like from the super advanced ancient Exelons. So what happens is the Doctor befriends an intelligent Exelon. They go into the city to go through all these booby traps.
90 seconds.
The Daleks are held on their heels with their machine guns. And then the Doctor gets to the middle, causes the city to kill itself. The Earth people get the perineum and get it on their ship by fooling the Daleks, by giving them bags of sand. And one of the Earth people takes a bomb after they blow up the antenna that restores power. He also blows up the Dalek ship with the last bomb. So now power's restored and the Daleks are destroyed.
5 seconds remaining!
And the city all melts down because the Doctor did all the meltdown.
Time! Time! Time is fleeting! Madness takes its toll. So, yes, good job. Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you. I was really determined to get under time, but I think I might have forgotten some key plot point. I was like, oh, right, and the city melted. Did I? And I forgot. Did I even mention the doctor got to the middle of the city and
And then
bodies.
Yeah, and then pulled circuit boards out. And did you get the sacrifice in there?
Yeah,
there's so many sacrifices in this. And apparently, because it's the 70s, you have to take a huge bong rip before you get sacrificed. It's basically
you have to go what?
A huge bong rip. Like Sarah gets this giant rip. Bowl. She gets this bowl of yes.
You said something else.
Bong rip. Yes, the Exelons are really into like having you way, way high when you get sacrificed. So Sarah kind of is on a vacation in a lot of ways.
I was high just from the music in this one. Because
the saxophone.
Cary Blyton's score. So Cary Blyton's the composer. He's composed. He's very notorious on Doctor Who. And, you know, it's kind of a love it or hate him. Kind of composer. He did three stories. He did Doctor Who and the Silurians. He did this one, and he did Revenge of the Cybermen. And this one is like it's weird. It's a little weird and comical in places. I feel like I don't know. It might be his worst. We haven't done Silurians for the podcast yet, but there are these weird moments where Daleks are turning corners, and it's just like
yeah,
Dalek circus. I very
and there weird. And there are saxophones in it at some point, which is I believe, which you don't necessarily associate. You associate perhaps more with Careless Whisper by George Michael than with the noise of a Dalek control room. But yeah, it's kind of weird in 70s throughout. Pertwee has another LSD trip when he's in the city. Which really, I think, cements Pertwee's position as the most psychedelic doctor, because he just keeps doing this. Like, you know, it was in Inferno, it's in Planet of the Spiders, I think. You know, there's a moment like that. There's,
well, remember the mutants?
Yeah, the mutants. Like, it gets super trippy whenever Pertwee is around, which may be kind of why he regenerated into Tom Baker, who is kind of a walking acid flashback.
Good theory.
Speaking of which, this was the episode that made Pertwee quit. This was the story that made Pertwee quit. Like, he announced after this. I mean, it's no secret that Pertwee hated the Daleks and that he just kind of was struggling through this story.
I don't know if this was the I mean, I remember seeing an interview with him a while back, and he just felt it was time, and part of it was Roger Delgado had died tragically in a car wreck. And, you know, Katie Manning had left. It just sort of started to feel like this was it was time to go. Now, I can definitely see this being a bit of a last straw situation because he did not like the Daleks as monsters. And this is kind of, if there is such a thing as a cash grab in old Doctor Who, this kind of feels like it as a Dalek episode.
Very much in common with the Chase, right?
Yeah, you didn't need to see them again quite so quickly because they had just had Planet of the Daleks the previous season.
Yeah.
And this one, I wouldn't say they're entirely extraneous like they are in Day of the Daleks. But they're not central to the plot.
Yes.
There's a lot of plot going on here, but you could do it with some other monster, even though the Daleks in their role here do get to be very Dalek-y, which I think is to the script's credit.
Yeah, it's very clear that even Terry Nation does not want to write the Daleks at this point. and in fact, I believe his original version of the script didn't even include them. Like, he's into the city. Like, that's the cool science fiction idea here. Right. Like, this eternal sentient city that, you know, most of the Exelons worship. And some of them are like, no, dudes, it's just a city. We got to destroy this thing. So that was fun. And it just sort of like the Daleks arrive at the end of episode one, like the uninvited guest at a party you sort of invited them, you know, months ago, but you didn't actually think that they would show up. You're like, we're just going to send that invitation. And then they land, and it really is the most impotent Daleks that I think we've ever seen.
Yes, but I mean that's part of because of the script, right? Like, you're talking about because they can't shoot anyone.
Yes, they're shooting blanks at first, and then they get their teeny tiny TARDIS for target practice I think they could, it really has to be said that it's like a little potato gun or a little BB gun that they basically attach. It's not going to do that much damage, but apparently it does.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit, I guess, BBC. Kind of, again, this is classic Doctor Who. I like the implication that you really get from the look of the hardware and some of the initial effects, like, well, the first time they shoot the Exelons on the cliff face, they're clearly trying to show these are machine guns.
Yes.
Even though they're sort of barely pea shooters, to your point. They kind of come in and the noise they make is ding, 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 ding. Like, it's not great ultimately. But, like, I love the idea of Daleks with machine guns for a couple of reasons, even though it's not fully realized here. Like, the idea is good, but I like that it shows that they're innovative and that they can essentially go like, okay, you're going to take away our guns. We'll build new guns and we'll make sure we can still have an upper hand and kill people because we also understand that's our whole thing. And if you take that away from us, we're kind of useless. So in other words, to your point, yes, they're impotent, but the script wisely is like, if we just have impotent Daleks the whole time, that's, I mean, that could be interesting, but it's also like robbing them of what they are. And so, having them back in charge with machine guns is cool. The only thing that is a missed opportunity, I'd say, and again, this is Doctor Who, so I don't know how you do it even in the new series, is that the brutality of, you know, turning someone into Swiss cheese with a machine gun is something that feels like it would be great in an adult Dalek episode.
Yeah.
But here, you know, it's classic Who, and you barely can even show blood, right? This is actually one of the few episodes that does show blood, not from the machine guns, but just in sort of that scary bit. Blood. Yeah, the Doctor's blood on the lamp that he brings out there.
Is this the first time we've seen Doctor blood? This first time we see that it's actually red?
Actually, that's a really good question. I'm not sure.
No, right in if you know. To your YouTube comments. do it, listeners. Well, I gotta say, like, but before I don't want to make you think I'm going to denigrate the Daleks in this, even though there's much to denigrate. This is not denigration of the Daleks. This is death to the Daleks. And I will say that because of Pull to Open, because this episode was selected by the randomizer, there is at least one new Dalek fan in the world. Because as regular listeners know, I often try to get friends into Doctor Who. And, you know, do double duty with the Pull to Open episodes that I have to watch. This time, I found a friend who really loves B-movie horror and also Adventure Time. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Adventure Time, but there's a character called Lemon Grab.
Okay.
And that is what my friend immediately recognized the Daleks to be. It's like a version of Lemon Grab. Go look it up. There's actually one video. Someone else on YouTube has already had this idea, of course. It's the internet. If you can think it, someone's already done it, of putting Lemon Grab next to the Daleks. But, like, he's just this kind of shrill character who just, like, you know, and he's kind of, you know, he's just yelling all the time about what he wants to do. And that's what, when you take the Dalek firepower away, that's what they are. They're kind of just this shrill character. And what my friend said about why they liked it was that they're just, they're kind of cute when you take their power. And what they said really stuck with me and kind of just rearranged my whole notion of Daleks in my head. They said, they're kind of on the spectrum.
Ha ha ha. Yeah, a little bit, for sure.
They just, like, their management skills are terrible. Like, they even went, like, they're not sort of wily and sort of trying to be nice. Like, the Daleks in Power of the Daleks are kind of, we are your servants. Like, no, these Daleks are just like, you will lead, like, we've agreed to cooperate, now you will lead us. Lead. Like, well, it's also, kinda
there's
cute.
That one Dalek, when they're attacked by the Exelons, the large group.
Yeah.
And one Dalek, even though he has no gun that works right now, just can't handle it. Like, he just starts going at them like, exterminate. I'm still going to kill you even though I can't. And then the Exelons all start hammering on him.
Yeah.
And it blows metal up, which is nuts.
Medal for bravery. I've got to say, I don't know. Daleks do not have medals for bravery. But if they did, then this guy would get one. Because, like, no one else is as brave, and then the whole of the story as this one Dalek who just goes charging into the Exolotls for no apparent reason. Now, I say for no apparent reason, but I will say that because this friend was super interested in the Daleks, I actually went to something I've been thinking a lot about recently, which is The Witch's Familiar. And specifically the moment where Clara gets inside the Dalek. You remember that?
Yeah,
and absolutely. And Missy says, "Say I love you," and it comes out as exterminate. Right. So now we know that Daleks even say exterminate when they say I love you. So I feel like a lot of these Daleks, when they're shouting exterminate, are really sort of trying to just express their feelings. And certainly that makes a little bit more sense of the Dalek that goes mad,
right?
Which is kind of famous from this episode. Should we talk about that?
Well, not the one I was talking about, but the one towards the end.
Yes.
That is so self-loathing that the moment it finds out it has failed and pushes aside the blanket that Jill was under and says that he's just like, I don't know, some rocks or whatever.
oh, no, they got me with the pillow trick.
Exactly. Like, it just kills itself. It just screams out, "Am exterminated, am exterminated," and then it dies. And it's like it doesn't even bother to tell its colleagues like what happened or offer itself up. It just kills itself. And like even Grace, who I watched this with, was like, I think it has serious self-hating issues.
Yeah, it really is. And it's trying to remember what its therapist said about I'm exterminate. I love myself is really what it's saying there. Dalek therapy, it just doesn't work very well because you hear yourself say exterminate. And then you're just like, oh, screw it. Suicide. Mm-hmm. So suicide is not painless for that Dalek. But is that the only Dalek suicide we see? Like other than Dalek itself, right? Which is kind of a spectacular suicidal moment. The new series Dalek.
Well, there's Remembrance of the Daleks. There's a suicide, and then which is a much better suicide, and then I don't know if there's other suicides. There might be. Someone write in, but the Daleks offering themselves up for sacrifice in Victory of the Daleks is borderline.
Borderline, yeah. Interesting. Someone write in and let us know what the actual suicide rate is on Skaro, because I think, they're kind of messed up, and now we know from Witch's Familiar, they're sort of trying to talk about their pain, and it just won't come out.
I like this analysis in that, like, the Daleks really are messed up, and I like the distance this puts between them and other races like the Cybermen, right, who would just be logical, and they would never, like, freak out without some other external factor in the way the Dalek does here, because the Daleks are crazy, full of hatred, emotional beings, and that I like that exploration. I find it much more interesting than dismissing them as another race of robots, which famously the Destiny did, and they've sort of had to walk that back bit by bit ever since. So good stuff. I like how this fits with that version of Daleks, the crazy Daleks.
Daleks, yeah. And of course, it's Sarah Jane's first encounter with the Daleks. And so the Doctor gets to catch her up and the audience, in case you haven't seen any previous Dalek stories, where the Doctor's like, well, actually, Sarah, they're not robots. The Doctor totally well actually is her.
Yeah.
It's like they've got a lump of hate inside them. But they've sort of never been more kind of relatable in a way. It's kind of like there's almost like a buddy cop moment in the city at the end where there are two Daleks that go in after the Doctor and the nice Exelon dude who's so forgettable. I forget his name. Belal. And they go in, and there's one point where one of the Daleks, the other is like, you know, the antibodies are attacking, and one of the Daleks is like, I'll cover you.
Right. Well, because one of them lost their gun. The antibody whipped its gun out.
Yeah.
And
so, first of all, sympathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like those Daleks on the Mary Celeste that, like, one guy dives in and they're like, whatever.
Yeah.
Throw him a Dalek life preserver or something? No.
These Daleks have learned teamwork and compassion and empathy for each other.
I wouldn't go that far, but they have learned some teamwork. And they also realize, like, this is the thing, the Daleks here are not the worst tacticians that they've ever been, because once they realize they're kind of screwed and they can't kill people, they're, again, they're not totally useless. They're kind of smart to try to, like, negotiate with the High Priest. And there's a point where one of them, ostensibly the leader, goes and talks to the High Priest and negotiates, like, look, we'll give you technology and knowledge as long as you help us. And they actually agree to it. And I found this, one, interesting, and I wanted to see that conversation. It sucks that we don't see it. But I also would have, I think it sort of shows how kind of dumb the Earth people are. Because they're like, oh, yeah, you go ahead and do that. And we're not, we'll just hang out here in the cage. You know, like, come on. Like, what the doctor just said, don't trust these guys.
Well, guess we'll trust them.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, there's some good stuff with the Daleks. They also don't waste resources. So once they have the upper hand again and they can just kill everyone with their machine guns, they don't, because they need a slave force. And they also need not just, you know, primitives like the Exelons. They need people who know what they're doing, like the Earth people. And they want to continue to fool the Earth people into thinking they're actually going to hold up their side of the bargain, so that they can get this sort of intelligent help along with sort of the slave labor.
You know,
so
what?
That's cool. It's all right. The Daleks are kind of good, duplicitous, diabolical Daleks here, which is kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning, where I said, like, they're even though they don't need to be Daleks in this story because they chose them, it's like, let's have them be Dalek-y. And they generally are. So points for that.
How so? I'm still hung up on the fact that they use a model TARDIS for target practice.
they're issued. They're issued to every Dalek ship.
Oh, is that one of those?
Yeah, okay. They encourage hatred of the Doctor. I think that was that was at least speculation in the the episode. What was it? The Discontinuity Guide or something?
They use it's sort of a form of anti-therapy. Maybe they like electrify the floor whenever they show them a TARDIS or something like that. But yeah, we've never seen one of those again, right? I was like, okay, did they make this in woodwork class? And
yeah, it's kind of it's a cute thing. Obviously, they just did it as a sort of a Easter egg. But it's interesting that they don't care that much that the Doctor's here, which is a kind of an indicator that, again, this isn't necessarily like the best Dalek story, because that relationship usually, and they can overdo that, obviously, if it's always about their enmity between the Doctor and the Daleks. Yeah. But here they just kind of note that the Doctor's here and also sort of note that he's an enemy. So they didn't forget. Right. It's just
They say the Doctor is an old enemy. The Doctor is an old enemy of the Daleks. And then they say the girl is unimportant, which shows they've clearly not learned from their previous encounters, because the girl, whoever the girl is generally important. And also, don't you say that about Sarah Jane, because she's going to get your ass and she's going to fill bags with sand and you're going to take off with a bunch of sandbags and look like idiots.
Pretty stupid, Daleks. But you know what? That girl.
I feel like the Daleks are so relatable in this. And it's not just the one who charges into the Exelons, because what he says when he's charging into the Exelons is, I'm losing control, I'm losing control, I'm losing control, which I think if you just sort of add a beat to that, you'd have like a very successful dance track.
Someone
do that, please.
Make the Dalek beat.
We will totally play. Yeah, there we go. That's the rhythm. I love it when their heartbeats go faster. Anyway.
Well, I really like the, just on that note, like right at the end, it's a nice little moment where they're on the Dalek ship when the power's restored, and it goes from silence and then it's doom, like that the Dalek beat starts up again. It's a nice little sort of subtle way of sort of signaling that. Very, very smart.
I would love a whole story about that beat and find out if it's like the sound of drums in the Master's head. Is it just like driving them crazy the whole time? But another relatable thing is when the Daleks at one point, so there are only four Dalek casings in Death of the Daleks.
And I think only three operators.
And only three operators. So you kind of, once you know this, you notice that in every scene, there's one Dalek that's very still. And then there's a moment where the Daleks are like, you know, they're negotiating with the humans about something, and then they're like, oh, we have to go back to the ship and talk to the other Daleks. And I just couldn't help but blurt out at that point, oh, really? There are other Daleks on the ship, are there? Do they live in Canada? I really feel like you can so empathize with the Daleks. I mean, this friend is now like looking into cuddly Daleks, like gifts with Dalek hearts. I mean, we just created a whole monster here. Yeah, this is what happens. You watch Death of the Daleks, and you start to fall in love with Daleks. So be careful, listeners. If you're out there, you've not seen Death of the Daleks yet.
It's not the worst Dalek story, and the Daleks are not the worst thing about it. I'm going to say those things, which is not exactly high praise. But one thing that's notable about the Daleks in this story is that the casings were not great. They had to sort of scrounge for them. But I will say the operators are at the top of their game. I feel like the Daleks, but because they don't just get to shoot people with their ray beams, they're very physical as a performance. Like there's a lot of sort of simultaneous movements of the head domes and sort of the twitchiness that they do. And it doesn't fall into that dumb comical stuff like in The Chase where they're like nodding eye stalks or whatever. Now I will say the gun sticks when they're machine guns don't move around as much. They just kind of sit there. That's sort of the one downside, but generally sort of the physical performances are pretty good. And I'm going to give points for good Dalek humor here. So in The Chase, it was dumb most of the time, but there is a moment, I think it's episode 3, where the root comes out of the river or wherever they're mining.
The roots, which I immediately identified as a USB cable.
it's pretty close. Got a big light on there. Yeah. But the Dalek that's out beside it gets blown away. And then the remaining Daleks are just kind of staring at this giant root thing that's sort of floating in front of them. And one of them just slowly turns to the other, like almost like if it had a mouth, it would be a gape, right? It'd just be like, and the one Dalek is like, I don't know what to do here, dude. Like the root, we didn't plan for the root. And so, that was funny. Like Grace laughed, I laughed. It's like, holy cow, this crazy route. And then in the next scene, they're just trying to like sort of pathetically be in charge again. Like, all right, we're going to start in a new place. That's what we're doing now. Like the Michael Scott recovery. We're not going to mine here anymore. We're going to go to another spot. All right, everybody pack up and let's go. Let's go mine over there.
Because you know what? The Daleks really care about workplace safety. that's what they're known for. Speaking of things they're known for, have we talked about psychokinetic power? Is this the first?
We haven't talked about it. No, well, Doctor Who hasn't either. No.
Yeah. So this is the first mention. So way back in Power of the Daleks, they moved by static electricity.
Yes. Right?
But now they're moving by psychokinetic power. So have they had an upgrade? What's going on there?
I guess. I mean, I don't think you ever hear about psychokinetic power again. So, you know,
it's just a 70s thing, man. Everyone has psychokinetic power in the 70s.
So the static electricity thing is funny. And that's actually interesting because that's another good connection with The Chase. Because The Chase is the first time mobility isn't even really mentioned, like the power of their mobility. Because in the first episode, it was very clear static electricity. In Dalek Invasion of Earth, they mention the discs on their backs, even though they don't ever explicitly say those are the reason that the Daleks can move. And then by the chase is just like, come on, let's just not even make it an issue. And they can do whatever. It's not like they never mentioned static electricity again. I mean, we did Power of the Daleks, and it's sort of come up here and there just to sort of indicate Dalek presence. But in terms of their mobility, they've always just been like, whatever. And here, I think, is the only time they say something explicitly different from static electricity, but it's clearly just so that they can move, even though everything else that runs on electricity has been dampened and can't work. So that's the main reason they did it. But it's
also
if you wanted to expand that to, okay, well maybe they did, maybe that was their big upgrade. So, cause it makes sense, right? Cause one, you don't have that dumb weakness that as soon as someone puts a coat in front of you, that the electricity is cut off and you can't move, but you also can't be immobilized by anything, presumably, other than maybe a mechanoid tapping you on your casing.
Yeah, that'll do it. I mean, you also have the possibility, given that it's the doctor that gives us this explanation, that the doctor is just, you know, rule number one, the doctor makes shit up.
Yeah.
So there's that. I feel like we've dealt effectively with the Daleks in this. There's not much more to say about it. We should say that there's unscripted Bob Holmes, uncredited Bob Holmes at work here. It's kind of the first.
Oh yeah.
So it is.
What did he do?
He was kind of, he stepped in as script editor. Basically, he wasn't officially script editor yet. But like, he changes a lot of things. Like, he thought it was too obvious that the elixir that saves the plague was called Elixil or something. The planet was Elixon. He's like, oh, come on, Terry Nation. So that's why he changes it to a perfectly non-comedic word, perineum, which is exactly how I kept pronouncing it throughout. I couldn't say perineum. I had to say perineum. Sorry, Bob Holmes.
Which is kind of like, whatever. I mean, if you call it whatever, because who cares?
Exactly. They did care about weird stuff in the classic series, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it is like this thing that is elixir, like, you know, sometimes that sort of iconic language and ultra simplicity can work in Doctor Who, but sometimes it sort of writes the whole thing into a corner too. Yeah. So, if you don't want to sort of make that choice and be more storybook about it, just pick a word. So they picked a word. It's fine. Well, it doesn't make it memorable though.
So speaking of writing yourself into a corner, I feel that's sort of what Terry Nation does. And if he is not phoning it in, he is at least standing by a large 70s rotary phone in this. But he gives us these puzzles in the city that are so damn basic. And we are asked to believe that the doctor, you know, has to figure out this maze that is clearly a not very difficult maze, and that all these skeletons are of people who couldn't figure that maze out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing. Yeah. We should talk about the city and the booby traps. So my reaction to this was essentially, who designed these things? The Celestial Toymaker? And I mean the Celestial Toymaker from the 1965 serial, not the one from The Giggle. Even though not the Giggle one wouldn't necessarily make them that much better. But because,
I mean, Ball would definitely be more interesting than this.
Yeah, the maze was pretty bad. You kind of wonder, like, how did people not do it? So Grace and I even talked about this, because it's like, well, I guess you get one try, because surely you would just try and try and try and try again and eventually get it. It doesn't reset, I guess, until someone else comes in.
I love that Grace is learning how to headcanon. That's perfect. But yeah. So the worst trap in here may be the one that is touted as a cliffhanger. And this is sort of notorious as a cliffhanger. And maybe we should talk about the cliffhangers in general, but let's start with this one. We just get a zoom in on the floor and you're like, oh no, it's red and white tile. It's really bad. Like, what is the cliffhanger here that they've kind of had a bad installation? Some cowboy did this. they got this parquet flooring and they didn't check the colors in the catalog. I don't know.
Yeah. All I can chalk this up to is that they were just rushed and they couldn't think of a better cliffhanger given how they'd done the rewrites, even though there was a better one. There was supposed to be one where basically the Daleks were right behind them. And I think it was supposed to be when they were right about to come into the city, you know, but that ended up happening earlier. So then they're like, well, we need something around this point. And it's like, well, I guess the floor thing. And it's just, I mean, it's not like it was like the worst possible place to end it, because they didn't even adjust the scene or the dialogue to realize, like, oh yeah, well, this will be the cliffhanger. Let's make this a little more tense. Cause like, you wouldn't it be better to like more ominously, like, look at the floor and then coming at it and implying that there's something happening and stop it before he says stop, don't move.
Yeah. You know? The behind the scenes on this one is that it was the cliffhanger was supposed to be a little bit earlier where the doctor and the dude whose name I've already forgotten.
Yeah, Bilal. Yeah, I was just saying that. It was supposed to be earlier.
Yeah, just keep saying it and maybe I'll remember his name one of these days. Where they sort of they hold back because the Daleks are entering the city. Cliffhanger, but it just didn't work out. Like it was a timing issue, so they have to make it. The floor is red and white. Oh no. What did you think about the other controversial cliffhanger is the end of episode one, where you see the Daleks firing, but it's very clear that it's just and everyone sort of makes this motion when they watch it because it's like, you know, the Dalek stalk doing that. But it just goes on just a little bit too long. And you're like, as a Doctor Who fan, you're like, wait a minute, where's the ray effect? Are these weapons just out of commission? Yeah. So it's kind of a spoiler.
It's totally a spoiler. This and the third episode. So they're bad cliffhangers for a couple of reasons. But the main one you've identified is that they give away the resolution of the cliffhanger, you know, like in the, like they cut it at the wrong moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do you who decided that? We actually know who decided this. Let's find him. It's Terry Nation.
Oh yeah.
Be the director, Michael Bryant. So it's probably a collaboration.
Or it could be Bob Holmes, or it could be the fact that Barry Letts was kind of asleep at the wheel because he was on the way out as well. They just announced actually during I think the filming of this episode that Philip Hinchcliffe was going to take over. Okay. It's interesting to consider what if Pertwee had been like, ooh, Philip Hinchcliffe, I hear he's an interesting guy. He's going to come up with lots of sort of cool gothic storylines. Maybe I'll stick around. But no.
Imagine if Pertwee was the guy who did 7 years.
Right?
Wow. That would have been interesting.
But there is that connection with the Hinchcliffe era of the fact that the City of the Exelons is mentioned again in somewhere we've already been, right? Pyramids of Mars.
Was it mentioned there?
Yeah, because they talk about all the things that the Doctor has to solve to get to Sutek. And he says something about this is like the City of the Exelons. Right. You weren't there, Sarah Jane, and she's like, or something like that, and she's like, well.
She wasn't in the city, but she got to the city first.
Like,
yeah, she did. And it's annoying. That's one of the things. So I'll get to that in a second. But this being like a good Sarah episode, I think it's okay. It's not the best, because mostly because Liz Sladen's just great. And I love how she plays creeped out Sarah. Like the way, you know, just the way she kind of not quite screams, but sort of half screams and gasps, I think is great. And like when she first encounters Belial, she has that sort of, I'm creeped out. So I'm like, this is all alien stuff. And I'm a little, you know, like I'm trying to be brave, but I'm also like having a very human reaction. So that's such a, you know, that's her, right? That's Liz Sladen. That's why she's always going to be the best.
And it seems so wrong. Speaking of Liz Sladen, that she starts the episode in a bikini. It's not that she looks bad in a bathing suit, but it just doesn't feel like Sarah Jane, right? Like, give that to your lesser companions who are just going to show some skin, right? This is goddamn Sarah Jane.
Bikini, it's early 70s bikini, so it's not the, you know, it's not so
She's blown up all of these, like, blow up, you know, the water wings, but also like a giant blow up Lilo, or whatever you called it.
Yeah, they went far with that.
Yeah, but and it's just
luckily she gets dressed pretty quickly. So,
yes, exactly. And I was going to say that
the blue flare of the bikini is still sort of visible, which is kind of like gives her a little character, you know?
It's a little accessorizing. I love it. We do. I mean, let's talk about that. First of all, the Doctor's an asshole for making her blow up all those items and then say you don't need any flotation aids on this planet we're going to. But also then the power shuts down, which is very interesting. Like we rarely see that on the TARDIS. And one thing we see, I don't think we see at any other point in the classic series, is how the console room is lit.
Oh, yeah. It's the darkest you see it outside of the Master TARDIS, for sure.
But there's sort of a shot where you see that there are giant white hexagons.
Oh, right. Yeah, they actually even have a zoom in. Like it's just the light that's going out, which was a nice choice. I mean, I like that because it really, really hits home that this is not just this happening, but this is going to be a major plot development. Like, the TARDIS is powerless.
Yeah, it's also, by the way, it's Pertwee's last time in the control room.
Oh, that's right, isn't it?
This is it. Yeah. Pertwee's always had a complicated relationship with his control room. He tried to take bits out during his first season use it without the surrounding TARDIS. That didn't work. The TARDIS really didn't like that in Inferno. but yeah, here he is at the end of it. And it's sort of, okay, what do you think about the fact that the door has to open with a hand crank?
I kind of like that. I like that the TARDIS has all these manual things that you can fall back on. And it speaks well, I think, of the Time Lords again, that they certainly highly technologically advanced, but like we've observed many times, technology isn't the center of what they do. And I like that idea that you can sort of go back and use a crank if you really need to, because it's kind of like technology agnostic in some ways. And this sort of emphasizes that. So yeah, I thought it was all right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. It's, you know, we were just talking about, you know, B horror movies. Like, it kind of has that vibe, especially when Sarah comes back in and doesn't check to see that the Exelon has gotten in and is kind of locking herself in with the Exelon. Now, first of all, that seems to be dumber than Sarah Jane is usually given credit for. But also, it's like her third story. Give her a break.
Well, it's also like it's dark, right?
Yeah.
It's just, even if she did, like, presumably she kind of did whatever looking around cursory would be, and she just didn't see it. I thought it was fine. I do think, just to sort of close the book on Sarah a bit, that she is robbed in the fourth episode because Bilal gets in her space. And so she doesn't get to do the city and do the fun problem solving with the doctor. Yeah. That's too bad. But she at least sort of makes the most of it. She is the one that gets to come up with the plan with Jill and swap the perineum for some sandbags and do it in such a way that the Dalek looks so bad it has to kill itself. So
yeah,
she does all right.
She really does. And yeah, she comes up with that scheme. Jill's last name, by the way, is Tarrant. Apparently that was one of Terry Nation's favorite last names. And he keeps giving it to characters throughout the Dalek stories. So I got to wonder if there is actually like a Tarrant family that is somehow cursed in some timey-wimey way to keep meeting the Daleks.
The Tarrants.
Yes.
Rhymes with parents. Maybe had some daddy issues that Terrence Dix, or sorry, did you say Terry Nation?
Terry Nation,
because Terrence Dix actually did have some input on this one, in that he suggested the overall storyline that they went with, and that this idea of an ancient city from a super advanced civilization, which actually, to me, I don't mind these sort of legendary things from eons ago, and I wish they'd kind of do a little more, maybe even in Doctor Who, with the early universe, so to speak, because it sounds like, you know, every now and then they do something about way in the past and there were sort of powerful races. So you have the Exelons and the Jaggeroth, just off the top of my head. Those are the guys from City of Death. And then presumably the Time Lords, which are, you know, they say sometimes that they're one of the most ancient civilizations. So in the early universe, you kind of get a picture that's like, oh yeah, most of these civilizations from then are gone.
Yeah.
Except the Time Lords.
And the vampires.
And the vampires.
Don't forget the vampires, stage of decay. Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of interesting, troubled times back in the early universe.
Speaking of ancient civilizations, we have here a moment that I'm not sure if it's Terry Nation, Terrence Dix, Barry Letts, whoever, maybe Bob Holmes. Someone had clearly been reading Chariot of the Gods, because we get a moment that just has no meaning, no point in the episode, where the doctor's like, oh, I've seen something like this in Peru. You know, maybe the Exelons went to Peru. And I'm like, and? So? Like, how is that useful information? What has it got to do with anything else? You're just inserting that.
Let's find the ancient Exelons. I mean, like, why not? You know, it's a time travel show. I don't know if they're that interesting. I mean, here they're certainly not interesting. Like I said, it's really too bad we never get to see that conversation with the High Priest. And, you know, the High Priest isn't even a guy, really. Like, they're just this mass of folks in shawls that I will give points for the mask. I think the masks actually look really creepy, because you kind of have to squint and like, look, is that a face? Like, oh crap, it is a face. And they look, I think even that holds up. The Exelon's looking creepy holds up in this one. But they're not a character. They're just all this mass of folks. None of them ever really stand out until you meet sort of the splinter group with Bilal and his buddy. And
you know they're a splinter group because they're in silver.
Right.
And you also know that they're nice because, you know, Bilal is, I think, the one who explains to the doctor that they've been there since like the beginning of time. And he doesn't say what an asshole would say in that situation, which is, we've been here for billions of years, Doctor. We've been here since the dawn of time, Doctor. How long have you been here? Yeah. Which, of course, now we know the Timeless Child Doctor probably has as well.
So we're going to have to cut to some questions at some point here, Chris. But before we do that, I think we want to let the good folks listening know that they can find us on the World Wide Web. And that is at a little website called pulltoopen.net. Feel free to check us out there. Subscribe to our newsletter where you can get full notes on Death to the Daleks and all of our other shows delivered right to your inbox with the podcast itself. So enjoy that.
That's right. You can become a patron of the podcast. If you don't want to do the YouTube companion thing, you can also go to patreon.com/pulltoopen. You can show your support, as we said during the Homoji Challenge, by leaving a review. You don't have to do a Homoji Challenge with the review. It's not necessary. We love all reviews. You can share it with a friend. Just pull up a random person in your address book for this very random podcast. Send it randomly. Like, subscribe, smash the bell icon on YouTube. We are Pull to Open on TikTok and Blue Sky and almost everywhere else, Twitter or X or Instagram or Facebook or Threads. We are Pull to Open 63.
And if you are on YouTube, don't forget to become a true companion of the podcast if you would like to support us. As we mentioned earlier, it's only $7.99 a month and you will get the podcast a day early. How about that?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. You could have told your friends about all of this stuff that we're going to be talking about. You know, note that the Daleks are a bit like Lemon Grab from Adventure Time and send them a video of that before they've even listened to the episode. Wow and amaze your friends by becoming a true companion. Now, is it time?
It is time for the four questions to Doomsday. First question, why did the randomizer take us here?
Well, it's kind of obvious, right? It wants the hilarious Dalek action. They are definitely both stories that are like, you know, what happens when you're forced to insert Daleks into a story where they really don't belong and you, the writer, really don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. It's back-to-back Dalek adventures. The randomizer clearly has a list that it's ticking off of. It's status peak at the Codex. The Codex is part of it. Neither this to the death to the Daleks really needed the Daleks. This one's, I think, better at showing them off. There's some Dalek humor done right.
Yes. It's called back to Pyramids of Mars from Lo Those Many Pull to Opens ago. Finally, the City of the Exelons that we totally forgot about. Also, we've done a few stories that are connected to like the 10th anniversary, which is, you know, technically what the Three Doctors was sort of a 10th anniversary story. We also, if you remember, we went to Nightmare of Eden, which was hatched at the 15th anniversary party. This one, Death of the Daleks, was filmed during the 10th anniversary. And a 10th anniversary party during the filming. I feel like the randomizer really wants to exhaust all the 10th anniversary connections that it can at the same time as giving us comedy Daleks.
There were not nearly enough photos from that 10th anniversary party, by the way. Just a few that I've sort of seen circulated.
We didn't get the one where Pertwee gets drunk and he's outside the bathroom with a Dalek casing hanging on his head.
We need that one. All right, moving on to the second question, which is, what if the evil plot had succeeded?
Okay, so
the evil plot is the Daleks' evil plot. They're going to not only ransom the galaxy with the Perineum, they're going to shoot a plague missile. down, or a missile if you're here in America, down to the planet and kill everyone there, and also make it quote unquote impossible for another landing party to come and get the Perineum. So anyway, let me find some problems, first of all, with this evil plot.
Perfect. No notes.
First of all, it's a little weird that the Daleks seems to believe the Daleks earlier when they talk about, oh, our people are also dying in the millions.
Yeah.
So maybe that's true. And not, in addition to curing their own population, they're also going to ransom the galaxy. But it's kind of regardless. The evil part stands in either way, whether that's a truth or a lie. So there's a bit at the end where the Daleks have recaptured everyone for the only reason because the script calls for it. Mm-hmm. And they're like seemingly going to kill them. And then they're like, no, we don't have to. We're just going to shoot a plague missile and you're all going to die anyway. So never mind. See you later.
We have become your companions and therefore we cannot stand to kill you to your faces. You are welcome.
Yeah, it's just so dumb because, one, why not kill them and see them dead, especially the doctor if he's so bad and, you know, you hate him because he's your enemy. But also, like, the TARDIS ain't that far away. Yeah. Like, surely, and I don't even know why they do this, like, because they don't know Galloway's going to blow up the thing. Why not make a run for the TARDIS before that plague missile comes and hits? It seems like they're all just like, okay, I guess we're all going to die now.
I think maybe after that experience with the TARDIS in the chase, the Daleks are in a period of not wanting to hear about the TARDIS. Like, it's just really, they've just been told it's a teeny tiny thing. Maybe they don't recognize it because they're like, it's not this big. target practice told us it was that big. So I'm going to propose an alternate evil plot here.
All right, go for it.
What if the evil plot is the cities? The city's evil plot, like, to perpetuate its existence and be worshipped by all the Exelons. What if it succeeds? What if it has better puzzles that the Doctor can't solve? Well, then he's going to be stuck in that room regenerating every 1,000 years or so, 500 years. Something like that, regenerates.
Wears
a bit thin. Still can't figure it out. Even in his Tom Baker form, can't figure it out. His Peter Davison form, has probably died of starvation at this point.
Well, he'd probably have to wait. Like, it seems like these particularly going from the maze, you only get one try. So he would have to wait at each point he didn't do it for another 500 years or so to get someone in there. I always like to sort of think of the last moment where it could have happened. And so I think we have to think of the final test where it's the psychedelic lights. Yeah. And he says the words, "You do not exist." And we don't know who he's talking to. So that would be interesting. This is the thing. Like, there is a great freaking fanfic scene. I think there's probably maybe someone's even written the short story about what is going on in the Doctor's head in this final test. Ooh. Which I think would be a great little bit, but you never see it, which is just one of the things, you know, it's obviously one of the detriments to this episode. And if you could write that in such a way that you're not sure if he ever got out of it, I think that'd be even better. And then that evil plot does succeed, right?
Yeah. You drive the Doctor mad and then you can't disassemble the city. Interesting. I like that.
He thinks he is Tron Baker, but he never really regenerated.
Maybe what he's seeing that's not real is bigeneration. He's like, no, you're a myth. No, I'll never do that. Okay, there it is. Gotta get in a bigeneration reference every pull to.
Yeah, I like the city being like a little smarter and better than we see it to be, because it ends up being this thing that's pretty easily defeated by the Doctor once he gets into the control room and he just swaps a couple of circuit boards. And even when he's in the middle of doing it, like, it seems like he never finishes, and the Daleks come in and shoot the antibody things and then they just run off. But I guess he finished because they just run off and the city still melts down.
Yeah, it's sort of the fact that there are two potential evil plots here, and the city is one of them. That sort of is the most telling thing, that the plot is a bit kind of all over the place and a bit confused here.
Well, the city is the more interesting one, as we've kind of like figured out. So I like that. I would have liked, rather than the evil plot succeeding, a refocusing on this city, which is a more interesting idea than the Daleks' sort of dumb, straightforward plan of ransoming the galaxy with Perineum, where they don't even bother to shoot anyone that could stop their evil plot. So, for some reason, I don't think that is going to end in universe conquest. But what are you going to do?
By the way, I love the idea that the Daleks, like, if they get away and they're like, oh, you know, the plague missile didn't work or whatever, but they've got all this Perineum and it's actually sand, right? No, but they're right. Like, let us make lemonade out of lemons. And they actually try to convince the galaxy that sand is the cure for this plague. Like it's a hydrochloroquine, whatever thing. What you need to do is insert the sand in your rectum and then you will not have the plague. It is very easy.
You need to make some sand cakes. It's like, come on, shut up, guys. I nearly got him eating sand. Stop laughing.
This is why Anakin Skywalker hates sand. There was actually a crossover that we never saw.
We've learned a lot out of this. Not Perineum, but we are done. We're taking off. We're firing a plague missile at that evil plot success. And we're moving on to the third question, which is, where is the Clara Splinter? Clara Oswald, of course, splintered a time at the end of the name of the Doctor. She's somewhere in every single Doctor Who story. Where is she in Death to the Daleks?
So I think she's one of the prisoners. Perhaps she's an Exelon. Or perhaps she's another human female. First of all, I think prisoner because someone needs to help Sarah Jane and Jill with those bags of sand. Like, that's a lot of sand to replace all the Perineum that they mined. But also, like, I keep thinking about the suicidal Dalek and the things that he says before he dies is that the human female has escaped. Now, maybe that's Jill. Or maybe it's also that another human female escaped not too long ago, and it was Clara. And this Dalek is actually in love with Clara. could not express it because to say love, you say exterminate, as we know from Clara. And that just sort of drove it over the edge. Like when this happens again, he's like, oh no, oh my God, history is repeating itself. I'm reminded of Clara.
Well, I'll do you one better.
Yeah.
That Dalek is Clara.
Oh,
it's another Asylum of the Daleks.
Yes,
situation.
Another souffle and, girl.
Yeah, and it hates itself so much, you know, already because it was once human, and it's been converted, and now just this drives it over the edge, which of course helps all of our friends because there's one less Dalek. It doesn't even get a chance to tell the other Daleks right away how bad a job it did. And it takes them a while to figure it out. So boom. And
just before it dies, it goes, I made souffle.
Yeah. You didn't hear that. That was a little muffled. It's not the
official. This isn't going to make sense for 20 more years. Let's scrap that.
Hey, that's not unusual in this show. We're good. Okay. I think that's good. I can't top that. Clara's the Dalek that kills itself.
What about
poor Clara? I feel for her, even though, again, it's in line with other Clara splinters and it helps our friends. So it all makes sense. But, you know,
what about Clara in the city, though? Like, maybe Clara is an Exelon, the Exelon who's responsible for designing those crappy tests, the maze.
I thought of that.
Yeah,
it's possible she was advising it, making sure they're easy enough for a third incarnation of a Time Lord to solve. You're being chased by Daleks, that they're quick enough to do. If your Daleks are hot on your heels, you can finish them. So there you
go. Or maybe she's the one who just sort of scatters the skeletons there just to give the doctor extra impetus.
Oh, I like that. That's better. Yeah. They're all like, wait a minute, this is plastic. This is from a bad Halloween store in the 20th century.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, maybe it's Clara and me have just placed it there. They've head off in their TARDIS again. They're like, the doctor's going to need this as inspiration. He's going to need a reason to figure out these crappy mazes. And, you know, cool. You know the doctor, he'll overcomplicate it. Just got to get him thinking fast. Put some skeletons in there.
Good stuff. A lot of options. Yes, she fits into Death to the Daleks. But it is time to move on to the final question. The ultimate question, the only question that matters for Death to the Daleks. What did we think of this story? Pull to open rating system is 6 ratings. There's the Dalek, which we give to a good episode of Doctor Who, and might rethink after this one. And there's the Ogron, which we give to a bad episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hayter, which we give to a not-so-good episode, but hey, at least they tried something. The Viscount Banger, which we reserve for the best of the best. The Fixed Point in Time, which is a show beyond rating, often for reasons of nostalgia. Or the Lady Cassandra, which is a not so great episode, but hey, it looks great. You might want to try it with the sound down.
Yes. Or the Perennium, which, oh, no, wait, that isn't a rating. It's just a bag of sand.
It sounds like that's what you want to give this one, though.
Yeah. Bag of sand. Congratulations, Death of the Daleks. So I like this one kind of ironically in a lot of ways, but I don't think that I can, in good conscience, give it anything other than a big old lumbering Ogron.
Wow, that's it. Yeah. That's all you got. Okay, great.
That's all I got. I'm sorry. It's so redolent of a show that's kind of tired and run out of ideas. And Barry Letts is asleep at the switch, and Terry Nation is phoning it in because he'd rather write The Survivors. It feels like old, lumbering old Who.
Yeah, I hear that. I liked it better than you did, but it's still like it's hard to like it. It's very forgettable. you know, you kind of like, oh yeah, there was a Dalek episode in between Planet of the Daleks and Genesis, and right, it's this one with the planet and the plague, and you just kind of remember it. It's the best thing I can say about it is it held my attention throughout. I wasn't bored, but it was kind of it wasn't fun enough to sort of justify the journey. So it's too bland. Honestly, Dalek Adventure should have a higher standard anyway. Now, had the city stuff been more interesting, had they tapped into like even, you know, 10% of the things we've discussed on this podcast, I think it could have been a Dalek. It could have been worthy, but it doesn't ever really do that. And it all just ends up being these sort of dumb puzzles and very predictable resolutions to all the stuff, like with the antibodies and the Daleks walking and all that. So to me, I think they sort of tried something, you know, maybe they learned something about where the show's at. So to me, it's a Professor Hayter. Not quite
an Ogron. That's fair. That's fair. I think a Hayter Ogron hybrid is a good way to look at this, that, you know, there are some new things that they tried in terms of like, I don't think we've seen that much depowered Daleks before. At least not when they're, you know, when they're actually depowered and not just pretending. Something new, and you can kind of squint, and the Hayter suggests that at least you're kind of having a good time with it.
It's an Ogron in a tweed jacket, that, you know, stovepipe or pipe, just a regular pipe, right?
Yeah.
That's what he did.
Concentrating on fish and chips.
Exactly.
Yes. All right.
If you're on Spotify, do not forget, this is your time to rate Death to the Daleks. Do you agree it's an Ogron or a Professor Hayter? Or maybe you think it's a Lady Cassandra, because, man, those Dalek casings never quite were this shiny, were they?
Yeah. You also got the colorful LSD trip. Like that could qualify it for a Cassandra. Well,
we were just complimenting the Exelons and those fine masks. Borderline Lady Cassandra, perhaps, but man, there was a lot of quarry. Okay.
Which was only because there was a lot of jungle and planet at the Daleks. Right. Otherwise it would have been jungle again.
Yeah, then they would have been too confusing, but we're fleeing nonetheless back into our own time ship, and we are activating the randomizer.
Yes, we are because our power is out, we're firing up the hand crank and the randomizer. Good thing that it is hand crankable or oil powered. The one line of the Death to the Daleks has not aged well, where Sarah's like, good old oil.
Drill, baby, like drill.
That's right. Sarah, you're supposed to be more progressive than that. It's 1974. The energy crisis is on. Come on. Anyway, so we are hand cranking the randomizer. Pete has the first section. It is called the Codex.
What's on the random? Oh, the blood.
Dun, dun, dun. The Doctor wasn't supposed to wander away from this randomizer, but he has, and we've seized it. So the first part of the Codex, and Pete, that is the list of how many stories that we have to do.
Sorry, I've got to knock off Death to the Daleks, and now
Death to the Daleks.
That, my friend, we are actually down to 197.
Wow, 197. Hopefully they won't come up with 8 new episodes shortly and add to that number again. No, of course they will. And we will welcome it every time it happens. 197 Doctor Who stories left to watch. We are more than a third of the way through our random adventure. And we plug those numbers. I plug those numbers into the controls of random.org, which is true randomness, not algorithmic randomness, which is more like the suicidal Dalek of randomness. This is true, bespoke, full of itself randomness. It uses stuff, plague ships bounding around the upper atmosphere. I don't know what it uses, but anyway, it's bespoke randomness. I plug in the numbers 1 and 197. We get a number in between them, but first, we like to issue some challenges to the randomizer. Do we? Fine. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to issue a challenge. It's going to be the impossible challenge, though.
The impossible planet.
Harder than getting us Doctor Who the movie. I'm going to say randomizer, no quarries.
Hey now. tough challenge there.
I know.
No quarries. Well, I'm going to say, you know, the randomizer is clearly on a Dalek kick. It's given us some ridiculous Dalek stories. It's obviously given us, you know, some of the most chilling Dalek stories. We've already been to Genesis of the Daleks and Dalek, you know, another fine Dalek tale. Day of the Doctor, which contained many. Give us a Dalek story that is superlative for some other reason.
Oh, okay.
And a superlative Dalek story. Like, you know, Genesis or Dalek may be the best. You know, maybe Chase is the worst or whatever. You know, and Day of the Doctor has, like, the most Daleks. Like, that's a superlative. So, what do you have for us? Something Dalek story.
All right, I'm into that. Mm. Let's see what it comes up with. Maybe the most not in it.
From Daleks ever. Well, let's see what we get. I think we've both got an equally good challenge here.
All right, here we go. Let's just get into the countdown.
Yep.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Could I have a lemonade?
169.
Well, definitely knew.
It does. Yeah.
Oh my God. The Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar.
No way! It did it again! Oh my God! It was listening at the start of the podcast. Oh my God!
Listening just now, this is the most something Dalek episode.
The most kinds of Dalek, right?
Oh yeah, that's true. The most different kinds of Dalek on screen. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'll have definitely stuff to say about that when we return to take on the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar, a great, great and interesting two-parter from the Capaldi era. I remember it being great. Well, I'm going to reserve my final judgment, of course, until we have a revisit of this. But good times. I actually remember writing the preview of this one or a review. I forget if I wrote the preview or the review for Mashable when we were both there. So I'll go and dig that up too.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Right. Time to talk about Davros and hand mines and the ethical quandary of changing Davros's life. And the
randomizer's favorite doctor.
Yeah, Capaldi is back again. And the randomizer loves Missy. Mm-hmm. And it loves Clara. And my God, we're going to have to find somewhere for the Clara Splinter to be while she's all over the shop here.
Oh, craziness, folks. Too apt. Too much. Too much pull to open. It is time to bid adieu. We have been this fine podcast called Pull to Open, which, of course, you can like, subscribe, and review whenever you like. Obviously, we follow us on the socials, Pull to Open or Pull to Open 63. Again, YouTube, go ahead and support the show and follow us there. That's a great way to support it if you only listen to the podcast. Also, following on YouTube is a great way to do it. Thank you, Martin West, as ever, for your music. And we will see you next time on Ancient Skarrow. Everybody.
That's right. What is this planet appearing around us? Could it be Skarrow? We'll see you there.
Take care, folks.